This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, today we've got an excellent guest with us, Jason Hartman, probably a name that I think some of you would be familiar with because he has been in real estate and real estate investing for a number of years now, even though he doesn't look old enough to have done everything he's done. But I guess he must have some secret here, the fountain of youth or something.
Well, Bill, I'll tell you something. I have another show called the Longevity and Biohacking Show. we actually talk about that, and I interview guests and learn a lot about that topic right there. So go ahead.
Okay, well, we're definitely going to have to get some information. That'll be valuable for our listeners as well. Because, I mean, looking at your picture here, you look like you're probably 17 max. Okay.
All right. Quite great, a bit older than that.
Great looking guy, though. All right. So Jason, he sounds like he's the king of podcasts here. He's the host of 20 different podcasts with over 3,000 episodes. Okay. My voice is like just dwindling away thinking about having to talk that much. But he shares powerful strategies for business investing and living the good life. He is a genuine self-made multimillionaire and serial entrepreneur who started has started 21 companies in the investing, financing, real estate development, and tech spaces. He has owned properties in 11 states, has had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in several thousand real estate transactions. He has visited 79 countries, enjoys adventure, fitness, and lifelong learning. So, Jason, welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
Great to be here, Bill.
Well, we are real excited to have you here. And gosh, you know, after listening to how many podcasts you do here, I hate to turn it over to you, but you're going to do most of the talking here. So people are sick of hearing me, you know. But I would love for you to share your story with our audience, how you really started from pretty humble beginnings and found real estate and learned how to play this game well.
Sure, absolutely. Well, I grew up relatively poor in Los Angeles, California. Didn't like being poor. By the time I got to about ninth grade, I realized all the best looking girls were hanging around with the rich kids at school, and I thought, I want to be in that group. You know, they go on all the cool trips, have all the cool stuff, and you know that just seemed in my shallow idea of what money was all about back then. That seemed like the good life. So I wanted to be part of it, and And when I was 16 years old, I saw an infomercial with one of those typical real estate gurus, probably selling a lot of crap. And, you know, but it did inspire me and it got me interested in the topic. And I went down, I went out and got the book of the guru that was on there. And I read three chapters, put it down. My mom read the rest. And for the next 2 years, she started really diving in, got very interested in the field, and went to a bunch of seminars and read a bunch of books and so forth. And when I was 18, about to graduate from high school, she says, you know, Jason, you got me interested in this real estate stuff a couple years ago. There's a big seminar in Anaheim this weekend near Disneyland, you know, and why don't you go? So I rounded up nine of my buddies from high school. I got them all to go because I, God forbid, I couldn't do anything alone back then. And, and so Friday night started. The first speaker was a guy named Hal Morris. And, you know, he was good. And he started talking about points. And I didn't know what points were. They're 1% of the loan amount when you get a loan, they're prepaid interest. But I didn't know that back then. And so just a year before that, I had discovered a few mentors that really changed the course of my life, you know, and in terms of the mindset, not the specifics of, you know, what to do. Real estate was the specifics of what I wanted to do. But the mindset really came to me from, you know, Zig Ziglar, Earl Nightingale, Jim Rohn, and Dennis Waitley. They, those four mentors just changed my life radically for the better. And so Hal Morris was great, and you know, at that seminar, and he talked about Zig Ziglar too. And then the next day, by Saturday morning, only one of my buddies from high school was left. And by Sunday afternoon, as the seminar was finishing, I was the only one that stayed the whole weekend, and everybody else went to the beach. But Monday morning, I started researching, you know, I got to just basically learn the business. You know, I don't know what points are, I don't know anything. And so I started researching real estate school to get my license, just so I could kind of learn the trade, not learn how to be some big shot investor. And I got my real estate license my first year of college, just a couple weeks before my 20th birthday, actually. And then I started selling real estate part-time for Century 21 while I was going to school. And, you know, what do you know? It took off. I worked really hard and did pretty good as a salesperson. And I sold to a lot of investors. And one of my investors, a guy named Jim Wool, had a property he had purchased from me in Huntington Beach, California on Coventry Lane. And he didn't like that one very much. It was a one bedroom condo. And he said, you know, Jason, why don't you take the listing and, you know, sell it for me and I'll buy something else from you. And I said, Jim, I don't want to sell this property for you. I want to buy it from you. And so I bought that property at age 20. It was my first rental property. And as they say, the rest is history. I have purchased many, many rental properties over the years. Now I have either part of or completely in my portfolio about 280 doors, single family homes, apartment complexes, well, one apartment building, one entire big complex, and then a mobile home park as well. And, you know, I've had hundreds and hundreds of tenants over the years. I've made lots of mistakes. And I do my podcast, The Creating Wealth Show, to hopefully teach people how to avoid those mistakes that I made and learn from my experiences.
Oh, that's great. That sounds like a show. I think it'd be value to our listeners as well. You know, that's they get plenty of mistakes on this show from me, but it's great. I think that's one of the best ways to learn. And I think a lot of people, when they look at mistakes, they look at it as a bad thing. When in fact, I think it's that's really where the education begins.
Well, that's definitely true. You know, you can learn more from failure than success usually. But the best thing is to outsource the failure learning to somebody else. Let them do the failure.
I like that.
And learn from their failures rather than your own. But, you know, you're going to have some of your own, too. It's just the odds are that way. And, you know, that's the way life works.
Neat. Well, obviously, you found real estate and ended up being an excellent vehicle for you. You have expanded, though, beyond obviously just being an investor and being a broker. Maybe you could describe a little bit of, you know, what, where your business is today and what exactly you guys do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was in the traditional real estate business for many years. I worked for RE/MAX at age 24. I was one of the top RE/MAX agents in the world. I was number 59 in the entire world for RE/MAX at age 24. So that was pretty cool. I had a lot of success there, but I always had purchased properties along the way for my own portfolio and, you know, did really well on most of those. And I ended up buying my own traditional real estate company in Southern California. Owned that for 8 years. That was very difficult. It was very challenging. I had a lot of challenges, almost gave up a million times on that. But I finally did end up selling it in 2005 to Coldwell Banker. And that deal took about a year to negotiate. And as it was happening, I started thinking, what am I going to do next? Am I just going to retire? Am I going to, do another business, more investments, et cetera? And you know, I thought I'd been through a couple cycles in Southern California, and Southern California is a cyclical market that's a very risky type of place to invest. I was a little older, more conservative, and you know, I just wanted a yield-producing investment rather than getting lucky, if you will, on appreciation. Which, hey, if that comes, I'll take it just as well as the next person. But you know, you can't depend on it very well. I have never met anybody in all my years in the business who can reliably predict the cycles, the appreciation or depreciation cycles. And I also thought, I want to do what, good financial planners will tell you to do. Just, I want to do it with a better asset class. So I'll get to that in a moment, but that is diversify. So I developed these 10 commandments of successful investing that have been kind of the core of my education to our clients. And so just to finish that story, basically what I did is I started researching different markets around the country, because I remember at one time in my career, I had 38 listings all in Irvine, California, and, as a traditional agent. And I remember that exactly half of them, 19 of them, were vacant when I had these houses listed.
Wow.
And everybody, you know, was during a very bad time in Southern California, and people were leaving the state. And I noticed that all my clients that were just leaving for job opportunities in places like, Arizona, Georgia, Texas, Colorado, I thought, I kind of remembered that experience, and I thought, you know, this time around, I want to be diversified. I just want to do it in the most historically proven asset class, income property, which I do believe is the most historically proven asset class in the entire world for people as an investment. And so I want to take that, but diversify geographically, because there's an old saying in real estate that all real estate is local. All real estate is local. So why not take the best asset class, but diversify geographically. And I also wanted to be in markets, and this is commandment number 5, thou shalt not gamble. I didn't want to do any gambling. I wanted to be very conservative this time around and not make any mistakes. And I didn't want to take a lot of risk. And so I wanted to be in these linear markets. Now, just to give your audience a little bit of information on this, there are 3 types of real estate markets worldwide. It doesn't matter where you are in the world, the same rules and ratios apply. I guess the only exception would be communist environments. So don't include Venezuela, Cuba, and North Korea in this, but everybody else you could pretty much include. Okay. those disasters. Are a whole different game. And don't include rent control in New York City or the Socialist Republic of Santa Monica or San Francisco. There you break the rules because they're just a mess. But in a normal free market, okay, 3 types of markets. Linear markets, those are the markets I like. They're conservative markets that produce very good cash flow. Investors in those markets invest for yield, okay? They don't invest for appreciation. But standard appreciation will come along. It's just that you don't invest for appreciation. You invest for cash flow. And commandment number 5 is thou shalt not gamble. So these are the types of linear markets I like. Examples of these that we're active in right now are places like Oklahoma City, Jackson, Mississippi, Memphis, Tennessee, Indianapolis, Indiana, Little Rock, Arkansas, Orlando, Florida, Atlanta, Georgia, Jacksonville, Florida, and some of the Chicagoland areas. And I just got back from Chicago last night, actually. And so these are some good, solid linear markets where people can get very good cash on cash returns. And since income property is a multi-dimensional asset class, where you get your return on investment in many forms rather than just one or two, you really can earn some phenomenal returns. So, like, if you were to go look at the performas at jasonhartman.com in the properties section, you would see properties that proforma returns of anywhere between 25 and 40% annually. Now, some people probably just tuned out and thought, well, that's crazy. That's really, you know, that's an outrageous projection. No, it's actually not, because it's a multi-dimensional asset class. I didn't say that's what you were going to get from cash flow. Your cash on cash return might be 8 to 11% on those properties. But when you integrate cash flow, appreciation, mortgage pay down by the tenant, all of these things, tax benefits, all of these things. And one unique one to me that I teach people about is what I call, and this one's a mouthful, but I call it inflation-induced debt destruction, where basically your mortgages are paid off by inflation. Because one of the beautiful things about income property is we don't pay our own debts. Our tenants pay our debts for us. We outsource that responsibility to the tenants as much as possible. Hopefully, they pay us a little extra every month in positive cash flow. And then as inflation happens over time, our tenants are paying those mortgages back in ever cheaper dollars. So I call that inflation-induced debt destruction, and I can give some great examples of how tens of millions of people benefit from that all the time and have benefited in real life over the past several decades. So that's the linear market investment strategy. That's the conservative buy and hold, invest for yield strategy. Now, other people will call themselves investors, but I don't think they are. I think they're just gamblers and speculators. And listen, I used to be one. Okay, so I was there. And those are people that invest in cyclical markets. And these markets have very, if you looked at a chart, you would see them go up and down like a roller coaster. You know, Bill, they have these glorious highs and these really ugly lows. Okay.
Right.
And, you know, if you get lucky and you time the cycle right, you can make a ton of money in those markets. But if you time it wrong, you're going to go broke. Okay. Mm-hmm. And those markets would be any of the sort of trophy cities around the world. So this applies worldwide too, by the way. You know, so these are places like New York, Paris, most of California, Portland, Seattle, South Florida, the expensive northeastern markets, you know, including Washington, D.C., Boston, I did mention New York. They would include London, they would include Hong Kong, Dubai, you know, it's all around the world. All of the cities everybody thinks of as these sort of trophy cities are the cyclical markets, the dangerous ones, the markets where people might make a fortune, but they also might go broke. And for my money, I just want yield. I don't want to think about it too much. I want to put my money in. I want to let it ride and just get a nice return every year. And so that's why I prefer the linear markets. And then there's the third kind, which is the hybrid market. And really all that it means, Bill, is it's just in between the two. Okay, so a hybrid market, a great example of that would be Phoenix, for example. Phoenix and Denver would also be a hybrid market. Austin, Texas would be kind of a hybrid market where, you know, the appreciation is sometimes pretty good and sometimes it's phenomenal depending on the cycle. And the cash flow is also decent, but it's not great. So those are kind of the in-between space, the hybrid. So linear or hybrid, definitely not cyclical for me. That's my philosophy.
That's great. That's great. Good information there. And you mentioned, well, you have 10 commandments of investing. I probably don't have time to go through all of them, but, you know, that
That I'll give you a couple more if you want to talk about.
Sure. Just kind of an overview. Yeah.
So, number five I mentioned, and that's thou shalt not gamble. Mm-hmm. Another one of the commandments is thou shalt diversify, and kind of a related commandment to that one is thou shalt be area agnostic. Mm-hmm. And what I mean there is don't be attached to any one area. You know, areas change. And some markets at some points in time make a lot of sense, and then they stop making sense. So my company, where we basically help clients invest nationwide and build nationwide portfolios, is area agnostic. Unlike the big real estate companies, the big chains and franchises, we don't have any physical presence in any market. And that allows us, I believe, to be a lot more honest because we can move in and out of a market, you know, just like that immediately. And if, you know, many markets that we've been in, but we're not in now. Okay, so I'll give you an example. You know, Las Vegas, Phoenix, Charlotte, North Carolina, Austin, Texas, Dallas, Texas. We've moved in and out of these markets over the years as they've made sense or not made sense. Now, does that mean our clients moved in and out of them? Mostly not, but sometimes maybe. And here's what I mean by that. So we will recommend a market that makes sense at any given time. But a lot of times that the properties in that market will appreciate too much. And what you find is that prices always lead and rents always lag. It takes a long time for rents to catch up in a fast appreciating market. So you'll see the rents will eventually catch up, but it takes time, and usually there will be some depreciation on the cycle. So these hybrid markets, like Phoenix, is a great example. We've been in and out of Phoenix three times over the 14 years I've been doing this. Okay,
wow.
And I was in traditional real estate before that. You know, I mentioned sold my company to Coldwell Banker, but now I'm 100% for the past 14 years I've been dealing 100% with investors only on a nationwide basis, area agnostic basis. So, you know, many of our clients that bought properties from us in Phoenix years ago, they're fine. Their properties are stabilized. They've realized some great appreciation. They might want to take that appreciation, do 1031 exchanges, and then buy in more linear markets. And or they may want to just sit there and wait. But what happens is the rents, like to go into Phoenix today wouldn't make any sense because the properties are too expensive. And as a ratio, the rents are too low. But there will be a time in the future, I'm sure, where Phoenix will make sense again. And when it does, we will recommend it.
Oh, great. So the linear markets, that's the focus of your efforts right now as an investor. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I did want to share one more commandment with you that I think your
sure.
listeners will like. This one gets a lot of interest. It really seems to resonate with people. And that is commandment number three, thou shalt maintain control. Okay.
Okay.
So thou shalt maintain control. Now, you know, we believe that people should be direct investors. They should actually buy and own the asset that they invest in. And, you know, they put their hard-earned money into it, and we think they should own it and control it. Rather than investing in a pooled money investment like stocks, bonds, mutual funds, or even a partnership deal or, you know, somebody's private placement memorandum or something like that, be a direct investor where you own the asset, you decide what to buy, where to buy, when to buy, how much to rent it for, when to sell it, when to refinance it. You decide everything, you know, be a direct investor. When you're not a direct investor, Bill, you leave yourself susceptible to three major problems. Number one, you might be investing with a crook, okay? And when you're in a pooled money type of investment, it's very easy to get burned by a crook. Okay. I mean, I don't have to tell you about Bernie Madoff, Enron, WorldCom, Global Crossing.
Right.
My gosh, the list is endless, right? And you know, whether it be the big frauds, you know, MF Global, with, you know, all of these big scams on Wall Street, but there's a lot of small scams too, that nobody ever hears about, where people invest in a fund and get ripped off there too. So the first problem problem is you might be investing with a crook. The second problem is you might be investing with an idiot. Okay. and so if they're dishonest or stupid, you may lose your money.
Right.
But the third problem, assuming you get past those two hurdles, they're honest and they're competent. The third problem is they take a huge management fee off the top for managing the deal. And so, you know, that's why we just believe be a direct investor. You know, that's the first thing. But the problem, there are some problems with being a direct investor. It's certainly not all great. One of the problems is, you know, that implies responsibility. You know, you got to pay attention. You got to manage it. You got to be involved a little bit. And what my company does is it just makes that involvement less and easier for people. So you can be a direct investor and kind of have the best of both worlds where you don't have to be as involved as you normally would, and you have some help and ongoing support, and that's what we offer.
Gotcha. What would you say? You know, our audience is mostly 50 plusers at this point, and what advice would you have for them as investors? In let's say those that are starting out, do you see single family homes in these linear markets as being a good opportunity for them? Do you see other types of investments?
Good question. You know, I think single family homes are just the most historically proven of the real estate asset classes. Here is the order that I like. When you're looking at the real estate investment, I like single family homes the best. I think they are the most proven. They are incredibly simple. I don't like condos. The deal's got to be really good to get me interested in a condo. I'm not saying I'd never do one. I'm just saying the deal would have to be very good to make up for a lot of the flaws that condos present. And then my second favorite after single family homes would be apartments. Okay, that's my second favorite. But apartments can be incredibly complex. Remember, when you have an apartment, you're really running a business, not an investment. Your apartment will likely have a profile on Yelp. People will write reviews. People will get together and talk and complain and gang up on you as the manager or the owner. They can do rent strikes because they're all neighbors and they're all talking to each other. And, you know, apartments have a whole new level of complexity. I like mobile home parks as well, but those are complex and hard to buy, and those would be the order. And then my fourth favorite would be self-storage. I have never owned a self-storage. I've tried to buy several, never been successful. But I do own single family homes as my very favorite. And then I do own apartments and mobile home park as well. But my favorite is the good old humble single family home. I think it's the best one. And you know, if you're going to buy six of them or 60 of them, we've got clients that do both. And, it just depends how much money you have and, you know, what you want to do with your investment portfolio. But I really do think the single family homes are the best thing going.
Wow, that's great. Well, we're getting close to the end of our interview. We have our little wrap it up session, or I ask you a series of quick questions. Before I do, I wanted to respond to, or actually ask you about a question that you look at Wall Street with an interesting viewpoint. As a
Wall Street is a scam. Well, just my opinion.
Tell us about it.
Well, you know, it's the commandment number three thing, right? I mean, there's no shortage of scandals. I mean, look at if you follow the traditional financial services industry, you're going to make someone else rich. You're not going to make yourself rich. I mean, there's a million stories about all the scams on Wall Street. There's the famous story about the broker who was talking to his friend and telling his friend how he was making such a fortune on Wall Street. And, it's an insider's game. And he took his friend down to the harbor, the marina, to show him his new yacht. And he said, look at my new yacht. Isn't it gorgeous? And he said, by the way, that yacht's owned by my buddy at Bear Stearns. And that one's owned by my buddy at Merrill Lynch. And that's owned by my friend at Ameriprise. And, you know, and all of this. And his friend said to him, where are all the clients' yachts? And you know, that's a good question. You're just making someone else rich if you're doing the Wall Street game. It's the thing is, it's the easy thing. It's the path of least resistance. You know, most people will just go and hand over their money to some guy in a nice suit at Merrill Lynch. And, you know, they'll think that they don't have to think about it. Or maybe they do think about it. Maybe they do really follow stocks and so forth. But you can't possibly know what's going on in all those companies in any real way. There's just no control. So even if you're not investing with a crook and you're not investing with an idiot, you're still getting huge management fees taken off the top. As Bill Bonner says, and Bill Bonner is a great financial writer. He's my favorite. And I've had him on my podcast before. He's the head of Agora Financial. And he says, Wall Street does an excellent job. It is a machine designed to separate the middle class from their money. And you know, that's Wall Street is, it's just a scam.
Wow. Well, great information. Just out of curiosity, before we move into the wrap it up session too, like, tell us, you know, about your company and where you're going, where do you suspect you'll be going with it in the next, 10 years, 20 years down the road?
Yeah, well, you know, I just think this is a burgeoning new industry. It's not that new, but it's maybe 20 years old or so, of investors that really want to invest on a nationwide basis. And, you may not live in the right market in which to invest, but even if you do and you invest near your home, you're not going to be diversified. And so people nowadays with technology, it's so easy, right from your computer connected to the internet, you can do everything online. You can see everything. You can look at the street view of the properties. You can get the comparable sales. You can find out what a new garbage disposal costs by going to HomeDepot.com. You can hire contractors, and you can do all of this remotely. You couldn't do that, 20 years ago very well. Okay. And it's really, I always say it's an amazing time to be alive, and technology has allowed us to really view, if you will, the old saying, the world is our oyster, you know, and we just have a lot of opportunities when we're not just looking in our own backyard.
That's great. Great point. Well, we're at the section now. We call it our wrap it up session, where I ask you a series of quick questions and you just respond with as best you can, as quick as you can. And basically it'd be questions on resources and things that you would recommend for people. When I ask you about books or websites, things of that nature, we prefer you focusing on other ones other than your own. For that, we'll go ahead and conclude. But I'll go ahead and get started if you're ready to wrap it up.
Sounds good. I have no idea what you're going to ask, so I hope I'm. Okay. I hope I have some good ideas for you.
All right. Off the cuff here. Favorite real estate book.
Favorite real estate book, I would have to say, is Creating Wealth by Robert Allen.
Great. That's a
classic. I could say Rich Dad Poor Dad, but you know, that's, well, most people probably say that one because that's the newer one. But yeah, I like the Creating Wealth book. It's pretty good. I mean, you know, the problem is it's old, right? Mm-hmm. So you can't do a lot of those things anymore the way he talks about them in the book. But there's still some great principles in that book, and I love all the quotes at the back. And so, yeah.
Oh yeah, no, he's a original no money down guy. You know, Nickerson, I think it was.
William Nickerson was really the founder of, you know, that sort of no down real estate investing. And you know, I don't espouse that idea because I think, number one, it's incredibly hard to do. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you know, a lot of these people did some of this stuff before the due on sale clause. They just did it in a different time. And it's pretty hard to do that stuff. And what you do is you might get your no money down deal, but you might be getting a bad deal. You'll have so little selection of deals because, you know, if that's your criteria, you're really going to miss out on a lot of other good things about the property, right?
So, oh, sure.
Yeah.
How about favorite business book?
Favorite business book? Gosh, I consume so many of them. I guess it's a business book, but The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by good old Stephen Covey is fantastic. I'm just looking through my Audible list a little bit right now. another one. Gosh, geez, there's so many.
Most valuable website for success. Again, other than your own. Yeah.
Gosh, yeah. A single website. Well, how about if I give you the most valuable app? It's a website too.
Yeah, that was my next question.
Yeah, well, okay. This is one thing. It's the same thing. Voxer, V-O-X-E-R, like box with a V, Voxer. It is that tool has made us so incredibly productive in my companies, and I have several companies, and that's just been a phenomenal tool. Voxer, it's a voice messaging app. You can get away from your computer screen and not do emails all day. You'll find your communications become massively more efficient. And if any of your listeners want to contact me on Voxer, my Voxer handle is jhart88, J-H-A-R-T 88. So I'll start you there.
Oh, great. Love it. All right. How about favorite quote?
Favorite quote is a Zen saying, and it is, to know and not to do is to not yet know. And that really is meant to counter all of the people out there who are lifelong learners, but never do anything. You know, learning is great, and big talkers, but don't do anything. You know, people that we've all encountered, the person who's a know-it-all, but doesn't do things. All life, everything in life comes down to action. And it's the people who actually execute on things that that benefit from them. So that's what separates the winners from the also-ran is doing things. So to know and not to do is to not yet know.
Great. And my final question, something catastrophic happened. You lost absolutely everything you have, except all you have in assets is $1,000 in cash. How would you try to rebuild your business?
Oh boy, $1,000 in cash. Well, you know, there's a book called The $100 Startup out there, right?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. Yeah.
It is so incredibly inexpensive to start a business nowadays that, you know, with $1,000, you could start a business. I could start the business I have now with $1,000. I certainly wouldn't have the momentum I have now, but I could certainly start it with $1,000. You know, it's amazing what you can do. You know, I would say the important thing is that if you have no money, but you do have time, become a content creator, become a thought leader, rather than taking the route of spending money on advertising and so forth. And it takes a while to build. It's pretty organic, you know, it's a much more powerful position in business. So whatever your business or career, and, you know, Bill, when I asked you off the air, that's really what you're doing, you know? Mm-hmm. You're not really doing anything yet, and I'm sure you will eventually, to like monetize your show or anything, but you're just building up this database of contacts. You're learning from the guest you interview on your show, and you are assimilating your own thoughts and techniques and ideas, and you know, that's what you're doing. I doubt you spend a penny on advertising. Yeah, but no. People will just find you, you know, because of your thought leadership. So I think you're doing it right.
Great stuff. Great. Well, thank you. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening that want to find out more about you and what you do. You've got also a ton of content, speaking of which, you know, on your...
I have over 3,000 podcast episodes, and that's on 21 different podcast shows, but I have almost 900 now on my Creating Wealth show, my biggest show, my real estate show. So, yeah.
Wow.
Tons of content out there, and all your listeners can find that on iTunes or whatever podcast platform they use. Just search my name, Jason Hartman, and that's JasonHartman, and then jasonhartman.com.
Oh, fantastic. That's great. I'm going to have to send you a book, The 4-Hour Work Week, you know.
Oh yeah. I love that. Tim Ferriss, you know, I didn't mention that one, but that book changed my life in many ways. So yeah, that's a great book.
So as you say, with all those podcasts, how could you ever do a 4-Hour Work Week?
Well, I have a secret for everybody. Tim Ferriss does not do the 4-Hour Work Week either. wrote a famous book about it, but Tim Ferriss works way more than 4 hours a week.
Okay, so. I suspect that. Yeah. Yeah. Every time I see him, I'll see, you know, the new content comes out, just add up the hours it took to put that together. Yeah, you know. Okay. Now this part, since you didn't get the initial questions you don't know about, but this is what our signature for our show is, that we have each of our guests close us out, because we are called the Old Dogs REI Network. And so we have each of our guests close us out with their best old hound dog howl. Now, you're like me. You were born in Southern California. There aren't too many hound dogs around. You know, I mean, there's a lot of dogs, but, you know, so we just ask our guests to close us out with their best howl that they can do.
Can I see if I can get my dog to come and bark? Coco, come over here and bark. Howl!
All right, that's pretty good. Pretty good.
That's terrible. But yeah.
Oh man. Well, Jason, it's been great having you on. Thank you so much for you're a busy guy, and the fact that you could come on and share some great information for our listeners really means a lot. Thank you.
My pleasure, Bill. Happy investing to you and your listeners.
Well, thank you. And for all of our listeners out there, too, we want to thank you for listening. We know there's a lot of other things you could be doing out there, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. So please remember everything that Jason talked about here. We're going to have on our website in our show notes, okay, at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you'll be able to go in there and get links to his website as well, and some of the references that he made during the course of the interview. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.